Hey, Link here. Thanks for joining me for episode 77, where I speak with Vince Miller, also known as Vince Steele, brand manager at 3D Realms, where we talk about the standard questions such as their journey into the industry, words of wisdom from their experiences, the games that made them want to be part of the industry, their favorite trend over the last few years, and their life outside of work. We also talk about what exactly a brand manager for a game company is, and the game they'd make if they were given the chance. Before we get started, don't forget there are links in the description that you can follow to learn more about Vince as well as the podcast. Also, don't forget to like and share the episode. Without further ado, enjoy episode 77. Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Vince Miller, also known online as Vince Steele, brand manager at 3D Realms. Hi, Vince. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I am doing all right. For me, it's like a Saturday morning just a Saturday morning for the weekend. So, you know, for me, it's great. For you, it's like a Saturday evening. So I hope your first day of the weekend has been good, and your first evening of the weekend is second evening, I guess, technically. Anyway, I hope you are rolling into a good evening, is what I should be saying.
Oh yeah, big chilling. I've been playing Darktide like recently, so there was some of that earlier, and I'm probably gonna jump back on that until I go to bed right after this. So yeah, it's looking good.
Well, awesome. I'm happy to hear that, and hopefully this isn't too much of a break to take you out of I sometimes start sentences with like an idea of what I want to say and it goes. Hopefully this isn't too much of a break that takes you out of that gamer mode, which is really a crappy thing to phrase it as. The best I can say is like when you play like Doom Eternal or something, and you roll into it and like everything starts to click and, you know, you're moving smoothly like a well-oiled machine. Hopefully I don't take you over the well-oiled mode. Again, that's still a horrible way to say it. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I got you. Nah, you won't. It's Darktide is a game that's like, it's mission based, so you can kind of jump in and out freely. I sort of need that these days, to be honest. Something that requires too much focus and dedication over time, that there's no way.
Yeah, you know, I definitely understand how that can be like that, at that point, that like something like that kind of almost turns into another job, right? And like, if you want to play games to unwind, you know, you don't necessarily want to have it with like a million task list of all this stuff to do that doesn't easily allow you to actually unwind, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's, you just hit it spot on right there, especially with like the way games now, they tend to be like 30 hours minimum. And then you have things like Elden Ring where you can basically just live in it. And I don't have the focus for that anymore. Once upon a time, I used to play World of Warcraft. So once upon a time, but not anymore. Not in my old age.
So yes, you know, I completely understand where you're coming from with that. And like, like you said it perfectly, you used to play WoW. So like anyone that's really been addicted, or maybe not addicted, but really into like an MMO, you know, they more than others, I personally feel, can understand the whole this game is a job that you're not being paid for, right? Thank you. I said thank you, but no, I'm glad you I'm glad that, you know, you're finding games that allow you to slide into not working while you're playing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm entirely not working while I'm playing it. I'm definitely, because, you know, we just put out Rip Out, and I'm definitely looking at that and thinking about like what they did to press on to their, in their press run, I guess, and the way that they generate hype and the way that we can generate hype. So there's always some attachment there, because that's just, I dedicate so much of my life at this point to like marketing and figuring out how to take these games that I believe in and make other people believe in them too. And I try to, there's always a little bit of analysis going on there, but yeah, sometimes it's good to just kind of fall into the zone and not think for a minute. And I think Darktide particularly is very good at that.
Awesome. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And that's going to, you know, for leading into the next question, I think this sets it up nicely. Because I was going to ask, you know, if you would mind telling me and anyone that's listening a little bit about yourself and what you do. And coming from the you know, brand analysis or like analysis of what you can do to try and build similar hype or what have you, I think that might be something that could be covered here, or, you know, you might be able to touch on here to speak to, you know, what exactly it is you do, like what exactly a brand manager is at a game company. Because in my mind, it's one of those vague titles that, unless you're knee deep in the industry, means nothing. And I don't mean that in like an offensive way. It's just a lot of terms when you're outside the industry are just random weird terms, right? Like, you know, my friend's an iron worker, and I'd ask him, you know, like what does that mean? He goes, I work with iron. It's like, yeah, that doesn't answer anything though. You say that as if I am on the construction site, you know, elbow to elbow with you, right? So like, could you speak to, you know, a little bit more about yourself, like what it is you do, and specifically what a brand manager exactly is?
Yeah, so a brand manager manages the brand. I'm kidding. Brand management, if you were to just lay it out on a piece of paper and just define it in the driest way possible, a brand manager, at least in some capacity, because there's levels to it, in some capacity, a brand manager is responsible for everything that front faces the public. And that is like the dry line that you write down on a paper, and then somebody's like, oh, okay, whenever you don't want to explain it. What a brand manager actually does is, so companies have, their brand has like guidelines. And it's particularly unique in video games because you have the company itself, and then you also have games. So these things, it takes up things like visual assets. It takes up things like brand voice. So the kind of copy that you see on any outgoing material that we might have, tweets, press releases, anything like that. The way that the company describes itself. And even down to like the granular aspects of a game, right? So part of my job is to play games that are underneath my brand management and evaluate how fun they're going to be, sort of try to anticipate how the public is going to receive certain parts of it. So like if there's a mechanic that's not so good, it's up to me to come to them and be like, hey, this mechanic does not function this way. I think this is going to, you know, hurt the game's reputation, hurt review scores, whatever. Here are some examples of how I think you could improve on it, discuss with them. It also comes down to like, there's also an element of strategy to it. So in marketing, we have what's called a go-to-market plan. So it's basically like a high-level overview of all the events we want to hit, all the activities we want to do, any kind of promotional material we might want to produce, any kind of anything like that. And it's supposed to, like, you aim for to create like a marketing cycle. So a brand manager tries to figure out when and how to best highlight the high points of a game for the public consumption in order to generate hype for the game or like help build the community, things like that.
So thank you for explaining that. And, you know, as you're explaining everything, it makes a lot of sense. And what's even worse for me personally is I have a degree in graphic design, and everything you're saying is just like, and this is going to be a little oversimplified, but it's just like, standard brand management high level, in some ways more than others. And as you're saying this, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, that's, I should have known better. Like it should not have been something that I had to ask and be like, oh wait, this all makes more perfect sense now, because like it already should have made sense given my history. You know, that's not to say I, you know, I'm not appreciative of you answering the question, because, one, I'm an idiot, and it very much helped being told the thing that was being told. But also, anyone else that's listening would benefit from hearing what a brand manager is if they're not in any
way related to like the industry kind of thing. So thank you very much for explaining that. And one of the things you had mentioned, this kind of goes back to playing for Ripout and the other game that I'm already not remembering that you're playing because I'm remembering Vermintide, but not the 40K version.
Darktide.
Thank you. For whatever reason, I just remember it's Vermintide in space, and that's just how my brain has like hard coded it now, and I'm screwed. But that also makes perfect sense, like when you can play or why you'd play similar games, and you'd be like doing analysis, right? Because as you said, you're looking for mechanics that they might have done better or like more polished or have a twist on, and or they might have mechanics that you feel you're doing better on, and you're getting ideas of how you could polish it more, right? So like that also makes perfect sense that you're kind of field testing things, right?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And just in case that comes off weird, it's not the game industry. One of the things that's weird about, like, for me finally breaking in is that people are actually really open to like the idea part. Like game devs from multiple companies will talk and share ideas and things like that all the time. So what, like, if you've played a game, and this is not confirmed, I don't have any like proof that I'm going to put in front of anyone, but if you played a game and you're like, wow, this does something like this other game but different, there's a good chance that those two developers like talked about it, and that the other developer talked about like their methodology for coming up with that, and then the next developer iterated on it themselves. It's in a lot of ways, especially on the like the lower end, but generally speaking, it's a very collaborative industry. I think people would be surprised at how collaborative it is.
So, you know, thank you for touching on that, because like that's something that, you know, I've spoken to a handful of developers at this point, a small handful, if you will, and like it's going in, I would not have thought that, but then speaking with, you know, as I speak with more, especially with devs that talk about games that are kind of niche and there's only a few others like it, hearing that they traded like implementations for things that they both were stuck on, or like talking about what they were doing that's the same, and then both of them kind of like iterating on themselves or on each other but still having like their own separate what have yous, or just even in the sense like what you're saying, that a lot of devs are actively talking and they're not like, you know, they're not, you're not keeping trade secrets, because largely speaking, I think most people, or most devs at least, understand it's a idea, and it's not the idea, like Mario, we'll use Mario, like it's not the running and the jumping that you're going to be like, oh, they made a run jump man game, how dare they. It's how you do it, right? So like the idea of a run jump game, and you guys talking about that, or devs talking about that and sharing it between different companies, that's, you know, it shouldn't come as a shock to hear that everyone is like, yes, keep doing your run jump man game, because one of them's going to be Mario and one of them's going to be Sonic, and then one of them's going to be Mega Man, because then they put shooting into the run jump game, you know?
Yeah, it seems to be sort of the way that ideas grow, especially like in indie space, because there is, of course, market competition. Attention is extremely expensive these days. Everything, especially this year has been insane, because it's just been like every 5 minutes something new that looks amazing comes out, and then it's a potential award winner, and then Baldur's Gate 3 came out and the entire world split in half and became nothing but Baldur's Gate for like 3 straight months. But especially on the indie level, because there's a lot of competition, but there's also a lot of camaraderie. Like a lot of people know each other within the industry, like people they worked on with game jams and stuff like that. So it's just sort of like a natural part of the creative process to talk to other people that you know who are working on something else or somewhere else, and then they sort of like spitball back and forth. It's really cool to see in real time. And especially with something like, you know, a lot of games when they're out, it doesn't really behoove anyone to not talk about it, because you could just go buy the game and then you're still doing the creative process on your own. So, but yeah, for me, it, in terms of marketing, is basically like, how do the people who are managing this game speak to their community in ways that I don't, or how could I improve, or how could I tweak? Because ultimately, people think that marketing is sales. Marketing leads to sales, but really what it's doing is just communicating with people. It is, especially on our end, because like I'm super into games. Everyone that I work with and know super into games. Like, I think there's this idea that specifically with marketing, a lot of people, they don't necessarily understand the medium. And that's, at least in my experience, it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, everyone that I know has that game that like got them into this and has that, the way of thinking and talking about games that makes them passionate about the medium itself. So whenever you're looking at something you really like, and then you're trying to promote something you really like, you start to kind of analyze the way that they speak to other people, because we know what we like, and there's crossover between us and the audience. We were the audience, now we just happen to be in game dev. So it's very much like how to align with an audience and a community on a one-to-one basis and be as transparent and convey that you really do care about the art itself as much as possible. At least that's my goal. I'm not going to speak for everyone, but.
So, yeah. So, you know, thank you for elaborating further, for talking about that further, because it's, you know, especially with something like brand management, which I said is one of those kind of vaguish terms, you know, where I only should have clicked in for half of it. And the rest of it, as you're speaking about, is things that you wouldn't typically like fully understand or even know about, just because, like you said, it's, you know, there's always more to it. Like you said, the knee or the on paper, you know, black and white, whatever that you would give to like the investors or whomever, is, you know, you're responsible for like the front facing, what have yous. But like, as you've been explaining, it's never that simple, and knowing and hearing about the not that simple is, you know, always really cool. So thank you. Now, you did mention something along, you know, as you were explaining, and this question, you know, you might have that answer in this question, and if you don't, that's perfectly fine, because I have conveniently a question to cover that one as well. How did you get into being a brand manager for 3D Realms, or just into the game industry in general, I guess. And like, can you maybe share some words of wisdom from the experiences that you've had that could help people or help people know what to avoid, or if that, you know, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, I got you. So I'm going to ask you a question in return. Do you want the long version or the short version?
You give me the version that you feel that you enjoy sharing the most. How's that?
All right. So how I got into it was a complete chance. Basically, I started my channel shortly after Total Biscuit died, because I was like, he was sort of my introduction into the whole YouTube thing. I had watched AVGN before, like basically everyone else, but YouTube didn't really catch on to me as like a medium that I should pay attention to or actively look for content on until I found Total Biscuit's channel. So whenever he died, I was like, man, he talks about a lot of games that otherwise wouldn't get that much attention because he specialized in indie games. So I was like, I have no chance at ever making it that big. That's fine. I'm just going to do what I can to talk about it. And then in that process, my first game that I ever made a video on that you can't find anymore because it's private for reasons I'll leave off of here. But my first video I ever made was a really poor attempt to be an off-the-cuff, just speaking, gameplay-oriented Total Biscuit clone, was Ion Fury, which had entered early access. This was back in like 2019 or something like that. So from there, I just start making videos just for fun. It was something to do. And then around the time Wrath released into early access, I made a video on that. And I'm not going to go too in depth on this, but that was like that was a pretty rough time in my life. So I was really like just grasping onto You also can't find that video either, by the way. But I was really just grasping onto like anything I could find to just like keep me anchored through this spot. And through that video, I met someone that you've had on this podcast and know pretty well by this point, Tyler from In the Keep. So he jumps in into my comments, sends me a message, all this stuff. And he's like, hey, you want to come hang out over here? We like retro FPS too, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I go, I start hanging around their community, putting out videos, you know, just sort of interacting. And then one day he messages me. It was probably, I think, probably in the springtime. He messages me and he's like, hey, I want to talk to you about something, but you got to keep it quiet. And I was like, all right. So he brings me into this chat. He's like, I swear, you can't tell anyone. This is a huge secret. And I was like, bro, it's fine. He's like, we're working on this thing called Realms Deep. And it's me. It's In the Keep. Me, 3D Realms. We're going in on this together. It's going to be like this giant retro FPS convention. Blah, blah, blah. It's going to be digital only. We're going to showcase a bunch of super indie games. And we need people to like edit interviews and stuff. And I was like, hell yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. So through that, and through that relationship, Tyler, he ends up working at 3D Realms slightly later. Through Realms Deep, I believe two. At the time, Ted, who was the head of Dread XP, comes to him and says, hey, do you know anyone who can like edit a trailer? And he's like, yeah, I know a guy. I was the guy. So he brings me into this. This is the first time I've ever like edited a trailer in my life. It was for a game called Spookware. It's very good. Brings me in and I work on this trailer and they're like, hey, are you like interested in, you know, being an editor for money? And I was like, hell yeah. Cause at the time I was working in a kitchen and I hated working in kitchens. Like I was pretty good at it. I ended up making sous chef before I ended up moving to Denmark and all that. But I never really liked it. It was just something I was doing to survive. So I come in, I start editing podcasts primarily. I also edited a few more trailers. And then one day, well, while I was in the kitchen and I was doing this editing stuff, I had a seizure out of nowhere. They still don't know why, but I just had a seizure one day. And so I had to pull back from my Dread XP stuff. And I was just sort of like trying to focus on myself, figure out where I wanted to go. And then me and my wife had a conversation and it was like, how badly do you actually want this video editing thing? And I was like, well, I'm desperate to get out of this kitchen. So I got a computer that was like designed. It was built for like video editing, things like that. And I just started working on my channel, trying to do whatever I could. And then Tyler asked me if I wanted to do a trailer for a game called Combustion that 3D Realms was publishing. It was their second trailer for Realms Deep. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty sweet. So I edit that trailer. Everything's good. Realms Deep goes off without a hitch. And then he sends me a message one day and he's like, you know, they're really looking for somebody in marketing over here, but they would have to move to Denmark. And I'm like, I mean, I'd take a shot at it if I could, but, you know, there's no way my wife's going to go for moving to Denmark. That's a long way away. As much as I would like to, there's no way. And he sends me another message. He's like, I'm telling you, you should apply. And I'm like, I don't think I can, man. Like, I don't think my wife is going to go for. And during all of this, I've been talking to my wife and I'm like, yeah, he's messaged me again. And she's like, why are you not applying for the job? And I'm like, because I didn't figure there was any way that you were going to go to Denmark. And she's like, stop being stupid. Go apply for that job. Like, what are you talking about? This is what you've been working towards. And I was like, okay. So on a whim, after, you know, I did have marketing experience at Dread XP because part of the whole video editing process was that I was, most of what I did outside of edit a podcast was cut up clips for promotional material for their games. So I was in meetings talking about things that we were going to do occasionally. There weren't a ton of them, but they would tell me, like, this is what we want to do. We need you to take, you know, record this gameplay, cut it into TikToks or whatever, and then, you know, work on these trailers, things like that. So I got to see, like, that was sort of my first taste of the internals of a game dev studio, which legitimately was, like, they are a subsidiary of Dread Central, which is a a horror publication that's online now. It's been around forever. But in a very real way, they were just like this extremely indie, like self-driven, auteurist, like horror label. They have things like the Dreadx Collections, which was just a compilation of shorts by a lot of people within the horror community. And then I was there around the Mortuary Assistant time, which was like, I can't speak to their success, but I remember watching in real time the hype for that game just grow and explode. And I was like, wow, this marketing thing is really cool. I really like seeing people excited by this stuff. So then we cut to the interview and I'm like nervous as hell. So I go into this interview and I make this whole presentation. Most of it's social media related because I didn't even know what a brand manager was at the time. I wasn't told that it was for a brand manager position. It was just marketing. So I come in, I've got all this prefab like social media content ready to roll. I make the presentation and they're like, all right, that was good. We'll call you. I'm like, all right, there's no way I'm getting this job. So I'm at work. I'm like, I'm going to let y'all know. I just took an interview for 3D Realms in Denmark. I'm definitely not going to get this job, but there is a chance that I'm going to get this job. So be on alert. I might be putting in my 2 weeks anytime now. And they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. So then like a week later, I get an email from Fred Schreiber and he's like, hey, you want that second interview? He's like, yeah. Come in for the second interview. Start talking about like, you know, pay and if I'm ready to move to Denmark and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to move to Denmark. What are you talking about? Of course I want to move to Denmark. They decide that they're going to hire me. I get off that call. I was up all night preparing for that second interview because I thought it was going to be like a grilling. I'm like, this is it. This is the one where they're going to cut me. You know, they're going to hit me with all the hard questions. And I mean, to an extent they did, but it was mostly about like, what are your goals? You know, are you actually prepared for an international move? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yes, of course. Yes. My goals are, I want to be really good at this thing. All right, cool. We'll make you the brand manager. I'm like, cool. I don't know what that is, but I'm going to go find out. So I had stayed up all night. I went and looked up what a brand manager was, sort of got my understanding of what it was as much as you can do from some Google searches and some YouTube videos, most of which are not about brand management and video games. And I was like, okay, yeah, this sounds really cool. This is awesome. This is my foot in the door. And so, yeah, I went and put in my 2 weeks and they were like, yeah, there's no way. All right. Actually, some of them still don't believe I moved, but that's neither here nor there. And yeah, one day I woke up in Denmark. in a new apartment as the brand manager of 3D Realms.
So, you know, thank you for sharing the story for that. I particularly like the, you know, the people still don't believe you've actually moved, as if like they think you're just hiding in that same, you know, area that you lived in. And like that one day they're just going to stumble upon you at like a Target or something and be like, ah, I got you. Which will never happen. Well, it might happen if you ever go home to visit, and then you'll have that awkward moment of, you know, speaking to them in not English or whatever it is you do to prove it, or if you even bother, right?
Oh yeah, I've got a Danish ID. I could just pull that out and be like, well, here you go. read those words. Yeah, you can't, right? Yeah.
So yeah, but thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting how that, you know, you started as I think a lot of people probably did, even before Total Biscuit passed, how like the inspired by what he was doing to try and do something a little similar, but maybe a little more focused for what it sounds like for you, because it sounds like it was like retro FPS or what have you. And like having, like, because a lot of, I think, It's weird. There's a lot of people that just don't know who he is. You know, like for the short and long of who he was and like just the impact he had on like the indie gaming scene kind of as a whole, is he, you know, he introduced a lot of people to indie games or smaller games, as well as also letting people know, like giving them realistic expectations of what they could walk into. And that was something that I always appreciated from his stuff. Cause you know, and this isn't me trying to like, punch down or what have you, But, you know, some indie games are a little rough in how they do certain things, and those certain things can be deal breakers for people, you know, myself included or what have you. So, like, having a realistic expectation of what you'd be walking into was fantastic. So it's not a shock to hear that, you know, he influenced you to try and do similar things, but it's really interesting to hear that, like, that's kind of where everything took off to, making trailers and editing, especially the Ty kind of throwing you into the frying pan with, yeah, I know a guy that can edit a trailer, and you've never done that before in your life. But thank you for sharing that, because it's just a really interesting journey. Now, I am curious from your start to finish of that journey, was there anything that, any experiences that you had that you can share some wisdom from that, like, might help other people? And now, I know in this case, it's like highly, you know, it's a very unusual journey. So, like, you can high level this as much as you want or what have you, but is there, like, anything that happened during that journey that you can share to be like, yeah, if you encounter this, probably don't do it, or just any kind of wisdoms from it? Sorry, that's a really convoluted way to try and spit that out.
Yeah, I'm trying. It's not that I don't have moments. It's definitely that I'm trying to figure out what the best one to highlight would be. So I guess for me, because I've been here about 2 years now between the two different companies. This is slightly after my year one with 3D Realms. So after 2 years in, I definitely would say, ideally, you would be younger than I was whenever I got to this point, because I am 34, which is not like ancient, but generally speaking, this is an industry that leans very young in a lot of ways. It's not like there's ageism or anything. It's just where the hustle is from the people. Like, most game devs who get picked up, they work really, really hard because they're like 25 and they don't yet have to be asleep by like midnight, or else they feel like they're about to die when they wake up. I would also say that the main one for me, it's not really an experience, it's just an attitude that I developed, because I hated the kitchen, especially after COVID-19 when everything went to hell and everything reopened. It was one of those things where I had a conversation with myself where it was like, okay, how badly do you want to get out of this? Because you've got this fledgling skill in this thing that has carryover, but you're going to have to basically work full time and not making too much more money than you do at your day job until this works. So I effectively decided that I was willing to die to get out of that kitchen, which is sort of how the seizure came about. So I was just working constantly. Like, it wasn't just Dread XP. I was also doing, you know, contract work on the side, because I was never like an official employee. I was a contractor, so I didn't have any limitations on like the contract work I could do. So there was I did some ads for a magazine at one point, and I'm not a graphic designer, but I was good enough for the ad, so I did the ad. And for a little second, I was going to be I was commissioned to write a couple of articles that never actually happened. Just anything that I could do to try to push it out and try to get myself out of that position so I could get here. Now, that's not something I would necessarily recommend that everyone do, but if you're not in a position where you are married and you're in a job that you consider dead end and you have all these obligations, if you're like 17, 18, trying to figure yourself out, I would say that's the time to really start pushing as hard as you can into that direction, because you don't yet have, for the most part anyway, not some people do, but for the most part, you don't have yet all of like the weight of day-to-day living on you just yet. Like, you might be in college, which is in itself, I also tried a little collegiate experiment that was also stressful as hell. But like, you might be in college, you can just do some things on the side or whatever, but whatever that skill is that you want, that you think can transfer into this industry, push really hard on that, like focus on that. Because if I had like gotten serious about this editing stuff from the beginning, I probably would have gotten here, maybe not this company, but I would have gotten into this industry significantly earlier, I believe. It's just about like figuring out what you want to do and then actively going after it.
So thank you for that. And I, you know, you've said a lot, you said a handful of things, and, you know, I understand, I agree largely with everything that, you know, that you were sharing, that you were advising or would have, however you want to phrase that. You know, like the I'm trying to think of how to best phrase it, but like the, when you don't have, like you said, the weight of the world or what have you, like of adulthood kind of thing on your shoulders, it's really easy or far easier to push yourself harder for things, right? Like that whole hustle and whatever is a young man's game. And I say that as like a 35-year-old, and like from the outside in, a lot of people were like, yeah, you guys are like 35, 34. You're not that old. But like in certain ways, if you've never tried to have like a legitimate attempt at a side hustle, I hate that term, but if you have like a legitimate attempt at doing something, a side project or something that is more fulfilling to you, even if it does require work or does require stress, you know, the older you get with more time constraints, like, you know, if you have kids or you have like a partner or you have a house, but, you know, I don't know who owns houses in this day and age because of, you know, everything, but like, you know, you have, like, there's always something to fix or just there's always something. And, you know, so like when I say it's a young man's game, it's the someone that is not burdened with the everything, right? And that term is highly contextual. Anyway, one of the things though that you said, and like it reminded me of something my father, I think it was my father, someone, or it's just a TV trope, it said a lot somewhere, but like, you know, 6 a.m. comes early or what have you. And it's like when you're not need, like when you can exist on 6 hours of sleep, like there was a long portion of my 20s, or up until my 20s, where like 4 hours of sleep was all I needed. Probably not healthy for me in the long run. For anyone listening, don't do that. It's stupid. Even if you can do it, don't do it. But like, I always hated the term 6 a.m. comes early, but now it's like, yes, 6 a.m. comes early. And like, it's just part of, you know, part of getting older and like being taken out by the most mundane of annoying things. But yeah, but no, thank you for sharing all of that. I like, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, if people are wanting to have like their own side project, kind of like you said, where you had to like decide how badly you wanted it, there comes a point for most side projects where like you look at it and you're like, is this going to be a thing I try and do? Or is this going to be a thing I try and have on the side? Right. And like hitting that line and figuring out how to cross it or how to balance it is a very difficult thing. So, you know, you figured it out. I say figured it out in air quotes because, you know, it sounds kind of like it was figured out for you in a way. And, you know, hopefully that seizure, that the health implications or whatever, hopefully that doesn't, like, hopefully that was like a one-off and doesn't come back, because that's never a fun thing to have to deal with. But like, you know, just knowing and learning where that line is and what side of it you want to be on is also a thing to that you have to like answer within yourself, right?
Yeah, and that's to piggyback off of your don't do the 4 hours of sleep thing. I don't know for a fact that that wasn't a huge part of why that happened, because yeah, there were many nights. I couldn't even calculate how many, but yeah, there would be plenty of nights where I would just sleep 2.5-3 hours, get up, do what I needed to do, go to the job, which anyone who's listening who works in a kitchen, I feel you. Working in a kitchen can be brutal. It can be like anywhere from 12 to sometimes 16, 18 hours sometimes, going home, getting back on the thing that I was doing before, which is why I say like it's not that you can't do it when you're older. It's that whenever you have less things that you have to worry about, you can put more of your focus on that instead of doing what I did, which was subsist on like way too many Bang energy drinks a day and not sleeping and things like that.
You know, as someone that worked at a restaurant, I was mostly front of house. I was a busboy. So like anyone that's worked as a runner or whatever, it's for those who haven't, it's a weird position where, you know, it's not back of house, but it's not fully front. Anyway,
it's brutal for everyone.
Yes,
it's brutal for everyone. I don't care how high or where you are in the position of any food establishment. That shit is brutal. Sorry, that is brutal.
But like, my family has a long line of working in kitchens and stuff. So like, I've heard all the tales and such, but I've seen it, right? Like, you know, doing what I was doing. And it was always one of those things where I could never like understand how a lot of the back of house people existed the way they existed. Cause like, for me, I spent, I don't know, let's say 40% of my time out, or 40, 50, 60, whatever percent of my time in the front of house most days, and opening the door to the kitchen and it just being a wall of heat and humidity. Like, and you know, as you know, like as a, you know, working behind the line or just in the back of house, like for 12, 15, like whole days, like you're sitting in there and it's like 100 degrees that time when you're over like it. Yeah. So, you know, always never been able to understand like how people survive that. So, glad that you're out of that. You know, there's also a lot of stuff that anyone that's worked in the kitchen knows is being glossed over and you know, left out. Drug use, everyone, drug use. The fun side of watching, you know, like the line chef being pranked on not energy drinks, having a breakdown while holding knives is always a joy to run away from.
I was going to say, that's how they survive the heat for that many hours.
Yeah, just
it's called speed.
Yes. Or you know, as Waiting, I think, was the movie with Ryan Reynolds, watching people doing whippets in the walk-in. That movie's a documentary for anyone that's ever seen it and is curious. That's all mostly true, like varying degrees of it. But the doing whippets in the walk-in, there's way too many people doing that. Anyway,
that's a fact.
But I'm glad
be nice to your servers, people.
Yes, be nice to your servers. And I'm glad you're out of that environment, just because, you know, as someone that's been in that environment, I'm glad you're out of it. It's, you know, it's fun for a very small period of time. And at some point, sooner or later, it immediately goes from being, this is enjoyable, to this is not. And it's not even like there's a slow burn. It's a light switch. But anyway, moving away from the hellscape that is kitchen or restauranting, I do want to ask you this, because it was mentioned a little earlier, or alluded to earlier, that like everyone in the industry typically has the game that makes them want to do this, makes them want to be in the industry, or at least makes them interested in the industry to learn that there are actually human beings, there are actually people, there are things making those gears oiled and making those gears turned, and it's not just like magic fairies in the console making the game as you play it. Did you have like a game or a favorite game or what have you that made you go, oh, this is the thing, this is where I want to be? And if there was a game like that, or you have a favorite game that inspired that or what have you, what game was it, and like why was it that game, you know?
Yeah, so considering that my channel and, you know, 3D Realms is so, well, 3D Realms was focused primarily on older FPS. We are expanding that brand. My CCO will kill me if I don't say that. But considering my channel direction and the previous direction of the company, I'm sure that it'll come as no surprise that the game that made me want to do that was Final Fantasy VII. I say that it, not jokingly because it's not true, but because you wouldn't think that like a JRPG would be the one that would be the catalyst whenever I work for something, a brand that's so FPS renowned, really. But that was kind of the first one because I didn't really grow up on like computer games. I grew up on console games. And I was 7 years old, I believe, when that game came out. And I'd been playing games since I was a little kid. But when that game came out, it was like that transitional period where 3D graphics are starting to get like sophisticated. I know that anyone who goes and looks at old screens right now would probably laugh if they weren't around for that era. But there was a time period where the three-dimensional graphics in that game were like mind-blowing. And I that was sort of like the moment where I was like, oh, okay, this is something completely different now. Like, I had grown up playing Super Mario Bros. 3 on the NES and, like, Final Fantasy 1, and I had a Super NES, and things like that. But that was really that moment where I was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, it has the credits roll, the credit scroll, and I was like, oh, here's this guy who he made the music, and it was such a compositional achievement for that era that was sort of the moment where I was like, okay, this is something like bigger than anything that I previously thought. And my parents were sort of cliche at the time. Like, they sort of encouraged the whole game concept thing to me, sort of, because, you know, if you can program, that's a job. But I don't know if they like knew that games were the future. I did. And I played that game so much that my dad like banned conversation about it because I just wouldn't shut up about it. You know, excited 7-year-olds are. He would be like, I don't care about Final Fantasy VII. Just shut up. But I was obsessed with that game for like, I don't know how many years after that. I would guess a decade. Like, that was my favorite game ever. Today, I would say Bloodborne. But, and there's also some Doom 93 in there as well. Like, that was my first real computer game that made that click, where it was like, oh, okay. And granted, that was way after it came out, but that was also the first time where I was like, okay, this is, again, something different. And then once you like actually learn the history behind Doom, you understand how incredibly important that game is to the entire medium. And like John Romero and John Carmack and Adrian Carmack and all those people, they're all like sort of celebrities within the industry on a lot of levels. But I would say those two specifically are like Doom, Final Fantasy VII. Those are the two where I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I never thought I'd be in marketing. I think everyone who plays like a game and wants to get into the industry thinks they're going to make games, but marketing is also a creative field, in case anyone thinks that, you know, the only creativity that happens is within the game development. There's also plenty of creativity in marketing. Don't worry about that.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And like, just to touch on a few things. Yeah, like it's really wild to think, or just the way you said it, you said Doom 93. And it's wild to me that is like a thing that needs to be given context now, just because like in my mind, when I hear Doom, it's definitely going to beat the original Doom. And, you know, Doom 2016 is the only one in my brain that typically, if I'm going to be trying to be explicit, where I'll like add on that subtitle or what have you. But it's just wild to me now that, you know, there's a whole audience, a whole set of people or what have you, that they won't know Doom outside of like Doom 2016. And I'm not saying that in like a negative way or like a you know, high horsey kind of way. It's just, it didn't click to me until you said Doom 93 that, oh yeah, there's people that don't know Doom was a thing like, it, you know, years ago. And as you also touched on, you know, they don't know that that Doom, or more explicitly, like it in itself, if you listen to John Romero's Doom Guy audiobook, if you read it, sorry, listen, read, whatever. But also to know, if you didn't hear any of like the bits and pieces through time, because it's been discussed all over the place, but the what they did, you know, outside of first-person shooters, they also did like a wild thing. So it's sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this. But no, it's just wild to me that people don't know some people don't know that Doom was a thing and know like of everything that they did and are responsible for in the long run of everything. But also it's funny for Final Fantasy VII how back then I remember you'd get a game and it would be like incredibly realistic graphics. It'd be like one of the review taglines, and like you would look at the review and it's like cloud and it's like a 64 polygon human being or like however many polygons were in cloud or whatever, and it's just like, look at this realism, right? Like out of a photo book or something like that. And like back then you'd be like, oh god, that's like, that's real, like look at how realistic this is. And like, you know, from the 20 or whatever years later, with the new set of eyes, you look back, you're like, well, for the era, that was fantastic. But then like you have the new Final Fantasy VII, where they're like going in and adding like pores to that mesh or whatever the word is to like their skin. So their skin has individually, intentionally crafted human pores that you can see regularly because of the 4K, right? And so it's just, the gear started spinning of like the amusement of both of those things when you mention them. Sorry.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, like even back then, sort of like just the base model characters, I was kind of like, these look sort of stupid because, Cloud's hand, well, actually all of their hands are literally just like gray squares. But then you see, like, I remember the Ifrit summon when it popped up out of the ground the first time I saw that, and I was like, what? Actually, this applies also to Super Mario 64. Like, Dire Docks is my favorite, like, level from that entire game, because I still remember where I was and the feeling of, like, going into the water and then going under the water. Like, if you're not old as hell like I am, and apparently Link is, if you're not old like us, you cannot understand like the way that felt at the time, because like 2D going underwater is cool. It slightly changes the way you move. Actually going underwater in like a 3D perspective for that era was so fundamentally like groundbreakingly different that was like, I cannot believe this is possible. Everything was 2D like 5 minutes ago, and now this is happening. Like, it was such a watershed, no pun intended, it was such a watershed moment to finally get that. And then, like, in Final Fantasy VII, there's a submarine that you can, and, like, there's a rocket sequence, and just all of that stuff I personally had never seen before. Now, if you were on computers, there were things like that already, or at least parallel to that. I'm not completely certain of the dates, but things like Daggerfall were around that time, if not slightly before it, maybe slightly after, but they were around that time that also were groundbreaking. And there are people who that was their formative moment. There's a mod for Daggerfall, Daggerfall Unity, something like that, that modernizes it, but it keeps like the core base of it. It's like a port, I guess. It keeps the core base of it intact, so you can go check it out. I missed the bus on that, but there are other games, like a System Shock. Those are also other games from that era that were like transformative. But for me, as a console guy, that was like, I had never seen that before. Or like a Metal Gear Solid is another one. Like, that game still stands up as it is. If you go play the PlayStation version right now, still amazing. Because it did things that we had never seen before at the time. Actually, that game still does things that people don't do with games today, but that's a whole different conversation. It's just, if you weren't around for that late 90s, early 2000s transitional era, you can't understand the impact of that. Like, when you hear some old people like me talking about the good old days, I'm not salty about modern gaming. I actually love modern gaming a lot. It's just, we're now to a point where it's much more difficult to be impressed now, because you've seen so many, like, transitional moments throughout the medium. And now it's like, there are Leafs that are still made, but they're sort of granular now. It's on like a technology level that like the base person is probably not going to be able to understand generally. Like most of the time when people see a game, they think like, wow, this looks really good. Or they might see like an interaction, but a lot of the innovation is actually in the actual like mechanical parts of putting the game together. And that part is also fascinating, but it's a little bit less accessible. But when you're seven and all of a sudden you see this demon guy pop up out of the ground in this, you know, rendered 3D animation, it blows your mind. Like, it's so difficult to, that's why we reminisce, everyone who's like 20. We reminisce because we saw that when we were kids, and now, you know, we see a lot, but it's a lot of it is, you know, there's like an Unreal style, which I like Unreal Engine. I know that's like a debate now, but the engine debate, but I like the assets of like AAA games today. And I like the assets of indie games that, you know, go back and try to evoke eras. Like Sea of Stars came out this year. Great game. It's very Chrono Trigger like, but the reason why I like that so much is because I identify what it was when I was a kid. And so you sort of have to deal with this for right now. This is our era. If you're like 34, 35, the indie space is trying to cater to you. You'll get your moment soon. Don't worry.
So a few things that you said that I want to kind of like leapfrog off of. And like one of them is speaking to like the older games, like the transitional moments versus like what would be considered a transitional moment now. Like VR would be like a transitional moment in of itself in its own little weird pocket, because VR is a weird nuanced thing. Even if you like, no matter how you look at it, it's a niche market, it blah blah blah, it's nuanced no matter how, like putting it into anything. But like going back, like going to like today, maybe even like it's the mechanics that are things that you're going to be seeing as what would be considered transitional, as people are like finding new and interesting ways to do things. However, like you said, going into the water and now you exist in a 3D space, or going from a 2D game to a 3D game, or even like I'll use Final Fantasy VI, which was a Super Nintendo game, which was a beautifully done sprite work, you know. It came out around the same time as Chrono Trigger. Same level of like polished music, gameplay, pixel graphic work. Like just, you know, you have that, and then you move to Final Fantasy VII, which is a 3D game, has back like pre-rendered backgrounds, even if they are only in like 340 by 480 or whatever. They're still beautifully done, all things considered. And then from there, even you step up to like Final Fantasy VIII or Final Fantasy IX, if you prefer to ignore that Final Fantasy VIII kind of existed. But like the transitional periods back then was noticeable. Like in a like 4 or 5 year span, we went from, or even like expand a little more, like an 8 year span, we went from having Super Mario on like Nintendo to Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo to then like Final Fantasy VI, then VII, then like VIII and IX. Like the leaps and bounds for us were like the actual world, the actual graphics and capabilities of what we were seeing. And then like the 3D space of having, you know, going into water. And then for like me, for example, I still don't like water levels just because I don't like the idea of things attacking me from that 3D space. It just makes me anxious. But like today, there really isn't a thing that exists to relate in the same way. Like it's all very like minor. Well, it's all things that appear minor, or there are things that are more focused on like the game feel. I think that would be the better way to phrase it in this rambly kind of thing I'm doing, is that like back then the transitional moments were everywhere, all over the place for a bunch of different things, and now it's like highly polished game feel mechanics that I think are the transitional moments. Because like back then, you know, you Aliens versus Predators, I think it was, or one of them, is the first game that introduced dual joysticks, and everyone hated them. They loved their tank controls. And now like every game uses dual joysticks, and like you're not going to have that transitional moment of playing games where that goes through this high level of polish, where you're seeing like what works and doesn't work on horrible levels. And now it's like, you're just, the transitional stuff is going to be like, someone spending, I don't know, like 3 months on the axe throw and return from God of War, right? Sorry, I'm kind of rambling with this and I'm worried I'm losing the plot. But anyway, the transitional moments, yes, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, going back to the statement of like, this is our era, so to say, where we are being catered to, or people are like discovering those older games from that time period and they're taking inspiration from them. It's fantastic because now we're also seeing those games that are nostalgic, but also incorporating new powerful technology. So like, you know, if the 64 was only capable of rendering like four enemies or whatever, highly rigged enemies or whatever in like the entire level, now we're seeing like that level of graphic fidelity, but actual technology that is powerful enough to do what they probably wanted to do 20 years ago. Sorry, I rambled a lot. I don't know where I was supposed to be going with that. I'm sorry.
No, you're completely good. I agree. I think most of the innovation now is going to be granular, except VR. VR is still one that I think that could be, it could be the next frontier for like games if they figure out how to really nail it. We're definitely going to see a lot of like leaps and bounds with that tech. Now, how long that's going to be and how widely it's going to be adopted, I don't know, but it's still around. So it's doing better than the last time that, you know, when Nintendo tried to do the VR thing with the Virtual Boy. So like, it's definitely on the way. And I think in a lot of ways, like to kind of balance out for people who are not as old as me, I think now we're seeing a lot of innovation in the way that like worlds are built and stories are told, because like, as awesome as I still view the Final Fantasy VII world and like the Ocarina of Time world and things like that, they can't really stack up to like, you said God of War, to like a God of War. And the AAA space in particular has gotten, because like back then, yes, there were AAA games, if you want to call them that, but there wasn't really like, the whole idea of a AAA game was not really a thing, because there wasn't really an indie on like a mass market scale to like compare it to. It was just, this game has a huge budget, this game has less budget. That was sort of like, as far as I'm aware, the way that it was thought about. But like today, you see like narrative techniques that are more sophisticated than I would have ever thought about having in a game back then. They're not always told through like game mechanics necessarily, but something like God of War, the actual writing of that game is really, really good. And then coming back to the game of the year, I don't see how anything else would come close to it. Baldur's Gate 3, the people are still finding ways that they can like solve weird problems by doing just the most off the wall, like this makes no sense, but then they're still finding like new dialogue somehow. I don't even pretend to understand how they pulled that off. So like things like that are definitely pushing the industry forward. It's not like, for, I know you understand this, for anyone listening, it's not like I'm saying that old games were better. It's just, it's one of those things where we were the generation that saw so much of that iteration that now is being polished to like the point that it is, whereas we saw the prototype and then the progression from there. Because I remember my favorite Zelda game is, of course, I'm going to forget now, Wind Waker on the GameCube. Not everyone's favorite Zelda by any stretch, but the change of the art style and the cell shading, and like that's the opposite of realism, which I believe most people expected Zelda to move towards, you know, realism. But that and the shipfaring mechanics and things like that, that was in a lot of ways set the standard for like something like Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Like that was definitely a direct parallel. So what we're seeing is all of that old innovation, and now it's being polished down to like this fine sheen. And then where the new iteration comes is in like the granular details. Like if I shoot that aquarium over there, is it going to leak a bunch of water realistically? Just like small, I don't want to say small elements, things that seem small, but they add to the immersion, because immersion is one of those weird things where if you think about the things that immerse you too much, they no longer immerse you. It's just back then the job got done much easier because we were coming off of, you know, 8 and 16-bit graphics. Or if you were somebody who bought the Sega 32X, I don't know why you would have done that, but I'm sorry for you. You're still healing. But whatever like bit they tried to push, I don't even remember. I never had that. But and that's another part of it too. Sorry, I should probably stop rambling eventually. But that's another thing is now there's three consoles. There's two mass market ones, and then there's Nintendo, who's just kind of holding its own lane with its own properties. If you were born after a certain period, you know Xbox, you know the PlayStation, and you know Nintendo. Back then, there was Atari Jaguar. If you're old enough, which I'm not, but if you're old enough, there was like TurboGrafx-16 or PC Engine in Japan, or those two are the same thing. Or what else do we have? Like, just they had so many consoles who were all trying to figure out how to beat, I mean, Nintendo, really, at a certain point. They were all trying to figure out how to beat this little gray box that was marketed as a toy initially. And then from that, we get these three just hyper dominant innovators, really. Because like without Xbox, I mean, people played FPS on console. Don't get me wrong. GoldenEye was kind of like the big one for that, even though I didn't like that game because I didn't like FPS on console because it controlled terribly, in my opinion. But that was like the first big one, and then Halo came out. And then all of a sudden there were just these like console-centric, like controller-safe FPS games that just lit up the world for a long time. Like, we saw all of this period, and now it's like it comes down to like the more granular details, I guess. Like, you're not gonna see another watershed moment like the Nintendo literally saving the game industry, I don't think. Because now we're the biggest medium on the planet. Like, so I don't see how that would happen again. But we saw that in some capacity. I wasn't old enough to see that, but I was old enough for like the playground discussions on what's better, you know, Sega or Nintendo. And it's like, I don't necessarily, I'm sure people still argue about PlayStation and Xbox. All you got to do is go on Twitter, but it's not quite the same. Like, there's never a Genesis does what Nintendo don't. That's not going to happen again, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so.
So, you know, I just to, you know, before we move on, that last thing you said, I understand what you were saying with everything else. And yes, I don't want to dismiss that. I agree. However, the thing I want to jump off the most is the statement of Genesis does what Nintendo don't. You know, for a lot of people probably don't know about that era, that like the Super Nintendo and Genesis, and then like the PlayStation, and like that era in terms of marketing as a whole was like Twitter feud levels of hilarity. Like, now if you have like some games that you're watching, I'm not gonna like try and name any, you know, you've probably, you know, anyone that's used Twitter and follows games has probably stumbled across it. I know you 100% have, but like, you'll get devs that are feuding with each other over whatever they'd like to feud with each other over. Some of it's as a joke, some of it's not as a joke, but what have you. And you see this stuff and you're like, oh, okay, that's funny, haha. But like in the era of like the Super Nintendo, the Genesis, the PlayStation, I still don't think those were funny ads. In the sense that I don't think they were meant to be jokes. I think those ads were legitimately, oh yeah, Jaguar was in there anyway. I think those were legitimate marketing runs where they were trying to cut each other down. Like, you know, some people, if you're listening, you might be familiar with the race car one, talking about blast processing versus the Super Nintendo and speed. It not an actual thing that made a difference at the end of the day, or or Crash Bandicoot standing outside of the Nintendo North America headquarters in the parking lot screaming through a megaphone.
I was about to bring that up, by the way.
Those were actual ads, and I don't believe those ads were in fun. Those I 100% believe were the companies actively out there throwing punches. So seeing it now, the debates of PlayStation versus Xbox or whatever, just remember that, they're largely friendly now. Like Phil Spencer basically said, coming along the lines of, everyone is a Nintendo gamer. Everyone is a Sony gamer. Like they're not out there largely having bad blood or publicly having bad blood because, companies, they want your money no matter what, capitalism. So there's going to be whatever and behind the scenes, but largely speaking, the industry is healthy when everyone is healthy. But back then they were throwing actual punches because they wanted, Sony especially wanted to see Nintendo gone. For those that don't know the explicit for that one, just look up the Nintendo PlayStation. That should tell you everything you need to know. But back then they were for blood, and it's just funny to think about now that that doesn't happen, but now it's the fanboys, or fangirls or fan people, what have you. They're out for blood with each other, not realizing the market, that their console is healthy when the other console is healthy too, in different ways, right? But anyway. Right.
No, I literally saw a kid get beat up because he was a N64 kid and not a PlayStation kid. I watched that happen. That would be, in my opinion, the difference, right? If people who fight on Twitter about PlayStation versus Xbox versus PC, they are mostly trying to justify their purchase. But back then, that was like hyper effective marketing. Kids would see that and be like, you're right, the Genesis does look better. And it was like, I mean, they were kind of right sometimes. The one you were specifically talking about, the racing game, I don't remember what game it was, but it was against Mario Kart.
Yes.
And like, if you look at the comparison of those two games, they're not even the same kind of racing game. Like, it was everyone here who doesn't know what we're talking about, go look up the AVGN video about the console wars. I believe it's called Genesis versus Nintendo, something like that. Look that video up. Anyway, continue. Sorry for interrupting.
No. No, and like that's, you very valid, valid point what you made. And like, yes, people actually threw hands, people actually got heated about this, which is hilarious to think, just because it's so wild. But I did want to say, so kind of maybe moving on from that, because I don't want to take you too much longer. I want to let you get back to your evening. I do have, one or two more questions, if you'll permit it. And the one before we got started talking, one of my staple questions is what you do outside of games. How do you relax or what have you? And you said that's a really non-question for you because, outside of gaming, it's just gaming for you. And that's always a valid thing because that is sometimes what people do. However, what you alluded to of that is that, outside of work-related gaming or outside of, your 9-to-5 work-related, because as you said, with, Vermintide in space.
Darktide, yeah.
I got it at the last second. You're looking for things that it did, because you're also thinking about, your guy's game, Rip Out. Oh man, I always hate being on the spot trying to think of games. I'm sorry, the titles. How that, so like it, I understand that that's a blurred line, as it probably is for a lot of people that I speak to, and that's always valid. However, you mentioned that one of the things that you usually do is enjoy games with your wife. And I'm wondering, maybe, outside the normal question that I ask, which is outside of gaming, relaxing, If there's like games that you and your wife enjoy together, that you can speak to help you guys unwind or help you unwind, because, you know, as everyone knows, well, I shouldn't say everyone, because not everyone is a social gamer, and that's completely fine. However, but as a lot of people know, you know, if you're a social gamer, playing games with friends, regardless of how technical or involved, or, you know, even if it's just playing like a Gartic phone or something small, like a party game, they're always fun. And when you're playing them with people, if that's your thing, you're going to enjoy it more. So if I'm just wondering if you would mind speaking to the kind of games that you and your wife play and enjoy together to help you guys relax at the end of the night or what have you.
So she and I don't exactly have the same taste in games. Normally we'll be playing our own thing in the same room because we both have PCs, and we'll be talking throughout it about whatever the game is. She's really obsessed with Overwatch 2 right now, and I'm playing Darktide. So there's definitely like some overlap in like the, they're not the same kind of game, but you can still complain about some of the same things, teams, people running off from their team, things of that nature. The last game that we played together, and we played it a few times now, was It Takes Two, which is a really good like couple game for sure. We also have played some Overwatch together a few times. But yeah, generally speaking, it's a lot of like doing our own thing, but together, because like one of my favorite games of all time is Bloodborne. She really likes Mass Effect. Like, that's her favorite game. I don't love Mass Effect, and she is not a Soulsborne fan. So there's also a lot of debate about that. She likes to razz me about how most of my favorite games are frustrating and kind of dreary. So there's a lot of that. But yeah, I would say I wish there were more games like It Takes Two, because that is something that we can both align on. And in the past, we've played like certain other things together. Like, I'm pretty sure we've played Mario together a few times on the Switch. Mario Kart, she's not like the greatest at not talking smack. So there's a lot of back and forth going whenever that game comes out, especially if I get the blue shell, because she's actually better at that game than I am. But yeah, things like that.
So thank you for sharing that. And like, you know, I understand what you're saying. I think a lot of people can probably also relate to that, because, you know, part of sometimes just being in each other's company is just being in each other's company in the same room, right? However, I do want to ask this, because, you know, you mentioned that her big thing right now is Overwatch 2, and previously it sounds like Overwatch 1. Or just Overwatch, because Overwatch 2 kind of got the Counter-Strike Go to 2 treatment as well. Arguably maybe handled a little better. only a little. However, I'll ask this, because this will be the first part of this one. Were you a big Overwatch player, or did you play it mostly to play with her?
I played it a lot for about a week. Okay. And then I got really bored. But I did try to watch the Overwatch League for like probably the first year, because I was really into Dota 2 for like the entirety of my college years. Literally lost real life friends over that game. I'm not going to go into that, but I was really into that. So I see Overwatch. I'm like, okay, this is it's arena FPS fans. I'm not saying that it is an arena FPS by any stretch of the imagination. Don't kill me. But as far as like the evolution of a game that fits the niche that was once occupied by arena FPS, I was casually interested, because I was like, okay, I don't have to learn a bunch of like extremely in-depth movement mechanics that move 10 billion miles an hour. This is something I could possibly get into. And I don't know, it just never really like, it never really stuck with me, but I knew that there was something there. So I would watch the Overwatch League for like a few months out of the first year. And then I sort of, yeah, I fell off of it.
So the reason I was asking this is just, I was curious if it was a similar experience for you, as anyone that has tried playing something like Overwatch or playing any kind of squad-based first-person shooter or team game, where like you have a friend, or in your case, a partner who's seemingly very much more into it than you are, and you get in there, you're just there to like be company, right? I'm wondering if you also had the joy of going into the game and having your wife effectively yell at you every time you did something stupid, where in your mind you're like, well, I was just using my skill, what's wrong with it? But in reality, you weren't doing it right, and now you're, you know, now you've drawn the ire of doing it wrong. I'm wondering if you also had that same experience. Now, I don't know if it's going to be to that extreme. Like, I know people that play Apex, and one person, when he would play, was very serious, and anyone that joined, he would be overly critical of everything they did, including things like peeking or getting the wrong gun or the wrong attachment, like, you know. So I'm, you know, whether or not it was to that extent, but I'm just wondering, you know, if you also had the joy of having someone giving you the business for, you know, putting your shield down in the wrong space because you took two steps forward you shouldn't have, or what have you.
In that game, no. She's as far as that kind of thing goes, I'm much more inclined to do that. That's why I try to stay away from competitive games, which sort of gives a little bit of a shadow of what happened with the Dota 2 thing. But generally speaking, I'm more like that. I almost got sucked into Rainbow Six Siege the same way, and then I had to quit that because I was like, no, this is going to eat my entire life up. What she does, this sort of a parallel to that in a way, is if I'm playing a game that she's already played, because when she plays games, she is like 100% straight and narrow. So Mass Effect, for instance, it's 100% straight and narrow, and she knows that game inside and out. So if I'm playing that game, she will sit and watch me play it and judge everything that I do. That's my experience with that. It's actually really cute. It's funny as hell. But sometimes I'm like I'll start to do something, and then she'll be like, I'm like, just relax. I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do. You just calm down. It's fine. That's why I'm not a streamer. I would just do things in order to make people mad.
So thank you for sharing that. And you know, I'm going to say this, and you know, I think you'll understand what I'm saying. But like, I'm happy and glad for you that you were able to identify that with those kind of games, and you know where to like draw the line. And you know, I don't say that in like a pandering or like a high horsey kind of way. But I think like I presume you'll understand what I'm meaning there, because people that haven't had that experience with games or known someone that's been like that, it's, or maybe some people that are like that and they haven't realized it, it's a whole thing, right? And being able to like get past it or like identify it or what have you, is hard. So like, I'm glad that you were able to figure that out. I'm sorry. I'm really hoping you understand what I'm really trying to say, but I'm just struggling to use like the right words to say it without it sounding crappy, you know?
Yeah, you mean like identifying that I probably shouldn't get so invested in Rainbow Six Siege that I just become a salt monster, I'm assuming.
You know, that is a way to put it, yes. You know, just because like it's, you know, as I'm presuming you yourself have already like, if you know what you alluded to, but also like I've been there with certain games, and like when you start to realize how it impacts your enjoyment of the game, it makes it difficult to enjoy the game, right? And like unintentionally, you then can ruin other people's enjoyment of the game. Like it's one of the reasons when I play Counter-Strike 2, for example, there's a lot of people that get super salty about you buying like an MP7 instead of an MP9 or like what have you. And they get really upset with you just wanting to have fun. And it's, you know, my mentality for that was, years ago, I got super invested in a game or two. And I realized it was killing my fun. Because, like, I was not having fun anymore. It now became, like, a job to me that I had to, like, keep all this nonsense in my head and run, like, the numbers and stay on top of the meta. Like, just all of that. And that's what I'm meaning, like, when I'm saying, like, I'm, you know, happy that you identified it or what have you. Just because, like, at some point, it becomes an all-encompassing or engulfing thing. And, like, it just, you end up burning more energy than you need to. Or at least in my case. And I apologize if I'm, like, projecting weirdly onto you for this.
No, that's exactly right. Like, in the Dota situation, we thought in our early 20s arrogance, we thought that we were going to be able to, you know, go to the international because we won this stupid little, like, $200 prize pool split across all five people tournament. And that was never going to happen. Way too late, and just there is some kind of, I don't know what it is, but there's a certain kind of, like, I don't know if it's an IQ or a reflex thing or what, but, like, a certain game IQ thing that I don't think everyone has. Certainly I don't, because, like, when I used to watch the Dota 2 International all the time, and when you watch those people play that, they would be younger than me, and granted, a lot of them started on Dota 1, which I didn't, but just I think there are certain people who have a certain, like, talent for certain kinds of systems. And I believe those are usually the people that you see in also a very young person's field of, like, esports. So for me to be in college and my friends to be in college and us trying to be, like, having these delusions that we were going to be, you know, the winners of the international one day, that was never going to happen. So in hindsight, because I have this problem where when I do things, I really want to be, like, the greatest ever at it. And that's not really feasible for basically anyone. But I still feel that way even today in certain situations. So I know that I need to, like, stay. Like, the next one was Rainbow Six Siege, because I was like, wow, this game is really in-depth. It's really tactical, blah, blah, blah. I used to play, I believe his name is Echo. It's been some years now, but I used to play Echo, and his thing was, like, specializing in droning and stuff. And just the meta of his droning capability, dependent upon the map, is itself an entire skill base. And I think I put, like, 100 hours into that game in, like, 1 week, and I was like, I have to stop, because not only is this going to consume my life, I'm also not going to become a nice person. It's going to affect my emotional stability at a certain point. So I was like, nah, I need to move on. Like, I was probably, I don't know how old I was when that game came out. I was probably at least 26, 27, whenever I started playing it. I don't remember. And by that point, I was like, I have to minimize things that are going to cause me pointless stress, because no matter how much I work at this, I'm never going to be a competitive Siege player. So there's no point. But at the same time, I can't be a person who just dips in casually and doesn't get that urge to compete. So I just remove myself from the situation. That's why I like Darktide. Darktide is a PvE. I don't really see there being any kind of, like, esport potential in that. I just like to run around and chop things up with the giant chain swords. So it's really good. I like that one. Still cooperative. But there's none of that salt machine there. It's great.
Yeah, you know, and, like, I think many can speak or attest to, like, or relate to that one, because, like, you know, even if you're doing something stupid, and especially if you're doing something stupid with friends, right, who are going to give you more leeway or give you a harder time over it, but, like, it's not the end of the world if you try something new, really dumb, and it doesn't work. It's also not the end of the world if you try something new and it's really dumb and then it works, but only that one time, because then you get to laugh about that one time thing, right? Like, the probabilities of doing certain things is always super small, and it can always be super hilarious, even if it was stupid, right? But But yeah, so like that's, yeah. So you, it sounds like you, you know, you understand what I was getting at. And anyone else that's listening, if you're in like the throes of that, you know, I don't want to try and sound arrogant or like know it all or whatever. It's never a bad thing to take a step back and see if, you know, that salt machine is doing you more harm than good, just because, you know, your mental health is more important than grand illusions of making it to, you know, the top of the esports scene when you're like 33 and you've never went to one of those camps and you have this idea of, oh, I can just pay someone $10,000 to train me for like 6 months or whatever, right? Like, perspective is always good for your mental health, I think, is the better way to kind of loop that one back and, you know, step away without trying to sound like I'm worried about arrogant or know-it-all-y or what have you. But Vince, as I said a little earlier, I do not want to take up too much more of your time. I want to let you enjoy your Saturday night. So I did want to, you know, I do want to let you go. I do want you to like enjoy your evening. However, if there was anything else you did want to discuss, maybe a cool game, something you guys are doing at 3D Realms that you would like to share, or just something you feel more people should be aware of, by all means, the floor is yours. Also, please let everyone know where they can find more information about you or what have you. And I'll be sure to include that in the episode description for easy access for everyone.
All right, so I'll address the second part while I think about the first part. Sure. So you can find me at, let me look up my own Twitter handle because I don't spend a lot of time on there anymore. You can find me at VinceXSteele on Twitter. It has a link to my YouTube channel that I don't post to anymore, but you can go see how I said that Chasm the Rift wasn't like Quake and how much I like Brutal Doom and whatever. Oh, actually, if you're going to watch any video on there, watch the one about, that Tim Schafer game. I just drew a blank. Brutal Legend. Watch that one, because Brutal Legend's a great game, and not enough people talk about it. As far as the 3D Realms thing goes, we have a lot of games coming up. We have the Kingdom and Remedy in 5 days. We have Ripout just came out. We have Kingpin coming this year. We have Graven and Wrath coming next year. We have a lot of things, so go check out 3D Realms. We have a lot of games coming. As far as things that I want to talk about, games that I want to talk about. Now that's a good one. I'm going to be honest, not really. I can't think of too much. there's a million things going on and yet nothing going on at the same time, because once there's too many things going on, it's impossible to focus on any of them. Especially whenever you work in this field where you kind of always have to be tuned into the market, but you also have to focus on your own things. So it's very much like I have to pick and choose what I give attention to. Baldur's Gate 3 just cleaned up at the Joystick Awards, so I'm expecting that whenever the actual like big Game Awards show comes around. I'm anticipating that one to just be a cleanup fest again. So yeah, go play Baldur's Gate 3 as well. Like, I haven't finished that game, even though I put like 80 hours into it, because it's one of those games where it's like you have to be focused and sustained for so long. But like the things that they did in that game are legitimately just like mind-blowing. Like, our devs internally still talk about how insane that game is and what it managed to do. Just mind-blowing. So yeah, go play Baldur's Gate 3. And also play Darktide. It's fun.
So yeah, so you know, not to dwell too much on that, and you know, so I can let you go, let you get on with your evening. But yeah, it's absolutely wild the amount of like my partner was telling me about for the Game Awards, the Baldur's Gate people holding like the trophies, that they had too many like, you know, he was giving a bear hug to like just a bundle of trophies, I guess, and like could barely even like keep them you know, keep them all. And it's like that stupid, as seen on TV, where someone opens like the cupboard and like all of their cups or whatever fall and they're juggling them around. It's like one of those kind of photos where the guy just, you know. So like, I understand what you're saying. I completely agree. It's going to be interesting to see on the other, like the other events, to see just how they clean up and if they're smart enough just to bring like one of those grocery baskets or carts or something to put them all in instead of having to try and juggle, you know, however many trophies get dumped on them again.
Yeah, I think they're going to need a pickup truck for that. I don't see any way that they don't win just half of everything at the big game awards. As just like, not to diss on Tears of the Kingdom, like that's not my kind of game, but I respect people who are into it, and I know technically that's a huge achievement. That game came out, and that was all anyone talked about until Baldur's Gate 3 came out, and then all of a sudden it was like, this is the only thing anyone cares about. Like, Twitter still is lit up with Baldur's Gate 3 stuff. Just incredible the amount of attention that that game has managed to just have, seemingly, like, I haven't really noticed it slowing. It's insane, especially the same year as Starfield. I thought Starfield was going to make way bigger waves, and it just sort of, like, came and went. Baldur's Gate 3 is still sucking up all the attention. It is wild to see.
So I'm going to say something, and it's going to sound absolutely bananas, because in my head it's been as, I forgot Starfield came out.
Yep. See?
So Starfield was a thing that came out like a month or so ago at this point. I forgot about it. Like, you know, admittedly, I couldn't play it because Game Pass is still broken in certain ways and won't let me install it. However, that doesn't change the fact I probably would have also forgot it came out had I did play it for a bit, because it's just, yeah. So thank you for reminding me Starfield came out, but also, you know, yeah, at Baldur's Gate, I imagine they're gonna have just a pickup truck out back shoveling them into so they can make it home easily with.
Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise they're gonna pull their back. Like, there's no way.
Yes. All the members of the team loading them up into like IKEA bags, strapping them to their backs and going.
Yeah, and trying to walk upstairs with all those awards. Yeah, there's no way. They're going to get hurt. They need a truck. They need a crane.
Game Award Sherpas.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. They need something, because I don't really see, like, I think about the other things that came out. And if I'm being, like, I'm sure Tears of the Kingdom will get something. Armored Core 6 might get something. There's Sea of Stars will probably get something. There are a lot of games that will get something. But the story is going to be about Baldur's Gate. I don't see how anything else takes more attention than that. Because if that happens, I don't see it happening. I'll just say that. There's no way. It has dominated everything the entire year, without stopping or even really slowing. Like, maybe it slowed a little bit, but not really.
Yes. You know, like, I understand what you're saying, and I'm in the same boat. I haven't played it yet myself. I'm waiting till I have like a stretch of time off, just because I know
300-ish hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm not new to the JRPG scene. I know how long RPGs work, and I'm not saying Baldur's Gate 3 is a JRPG. I'm just saying it's not my first rodeo on a big ol' RPG, right? So, like, I'm being smart about it. And, you know, when I get to it, I'm going to get to it. But, yeah, like, I, you know, from everything I've heard from people, from reading, from what have you, yeah, like, it will be a shocker if it does not clean house. In one way or another, right? Like, it's not going to win best first-person shooter of the year. You know, I don't think we're going to see... I forget who it was that did this, like, years ago, that gave best story to, like, Call of Duty, because Activision bought the entire thing out. We're obviously not going to see that. However, for everything that it can be an awarded for, I'll be shocked if it's not taken that home, you know? But Vince, as I said, I want to let you go. I want you to enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening. I want you to get back to Dark Tide. So if there wasn't anything else, I will let you get off your evening.
It's pretty much it for me. I think it's been cool being here. If you have more questions, I don't actually have to run.
I get what you're getting at. And you know what? This is what I'll do. I'll throw out two more quick ones for you. Just because I think myself have something coming up on the horizon that I also need to be aware of. However, I'll throw these ones out for you just because I think it would just be interesting to kind of hear. Now, as just from the brand manager perspective and everything that you're looking into. This one's going to be phrased kind of bluntly in a weird way. Like there, you know, there's probably some more nuance to it is what I should say that I could do. From your perspective, from, you know, the things that you do at work and what have you, is there a game or a kind of game that, also I'm realizing I'm saying, you might not even be able to answer this, because it might be one of those things that's in the work, or what have you. But anyway, to the actual question, from your perspective or from what you've been doing as a brand manager, is there like a game that, given the ability to direct people towards, or given the ability to make decisions on, or advise on being what you think like the market would really like, or however like this works in your world, is there a game that if Frederick Schreiber came up to you and said like, hey, hit me with the pitch, what do you want to see done? Given the freedom to like have that game made or direct people in like the game to look into or what have you, is there a game that you would like to see created? Or I'm aware that's I'm struggling to create the nuance for this question in the moment. However, I hope you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I get you. So I have two. I would like to see. Yeah, I'll do this without going into a giant rant. So I would like to see a return of like the Darksiders? Yeah. The Darksiders style, like sort of 3D character action, like sort of 3D Legend of Zelda-ish, but non-open world era, that kind of thing, but like in the Spawn universe. Because we haven't had a good Spawn game in a long time. The other one would be I don't know if you've ever played like the Warriors back when Rockstar did things other than GTA and GTA in the West, but they used to have a game called The Warriors, which was an adaptation of the movie, and like Bully and things like that. They played very similarly, but they were different games. I would like to see a game in that vein, but set in Gangs of New York. And we are working on neither of those, so none of that's NDA'd.
You know, yes, I understand what you're saying, because like, when I originally was pitching Darksider to people like to play, the way I would describe it is it's a mature version of Zelda, because that's 100%, like, you know, you in the first one of the bosses that you, when you beat them, you like smash their head in with a train or something. It's been a few years, but I understand completely that yes, a new Darksiders would be cool to see, just because there aren't a lot of strict action adventure games like that geared towards adults. In the same format, the same kind of dungeon, get an item in the dungeon, new mechanic, whatever. Like there aren't a lot of adult oriented ones, or mature oriented ones, I should say. And I think it would be interesting to see more of Darksider, because from what I played of them, it nailed it. It had a good handle of what made a Zelda game a Zelda game, while also making it not a kid's game, which just opens up a whole different level of themes or mechanics that you can explore. I'm not trying to like rag on the kid friendly or young audience version of like one of those games. It's just there's themes and stuff that 100% has to stray away from or skirt around very gently, whereas like Darkstars, like I said, you like smash an enemy or a boss's head in with like a train subway car thing, and it, you know, yeah. So yeah, I understand completely, would agree, you know, agree 100%. And also, you're right, it would be nice to see Rockstar Europe effectively, because I think they're the ones that were responsible for like Warriors and Bully and such, to see a Rockstar North or whatever they are, see them get back into not just being part of the Grand Theft Auto machine, just because, like, you know, as nice as Grand Theft Auto is, seeing them have a chance to make funny games again, I'm worried that that's not going to translate to a lot of people, just because of like, if you don't know, that means nothing. But like, seeing them have the ability to make not like totally serious games again would be nice, because it's a market that's like just not there in the same level of polish that they had. Like Saints Row 2, or the original Saints, like Saints Row 2 and 3 were like the response to Grand Theft Auto being more serious, or as I would say to people, the, you know, them becoming the fun police in trying to take away, trying to say how you can have fun. Whereas like San Andreas was very much not that, and where Saints Row 2 like and 3 were very much like the opposite coin of, you know, this is how you can do things and this is how you're going to do things, what have you, what have you. So yeah, I agree completely. Those would be lovely things to see. And if, you know, if people hear that and they're like, that doesn't make any sense, just go take a look at Bully. Take a look at Warriors. The watch the Warriors movie if you want a easier understanding of just how wacky, like this, I don't want to say the source material, avoid the book. The book is problematic in different ways. But the movie was wild in its own way of like portraying all of the gangs in New York as like the Fifth Street Ballers. And they're actually people that come out in like baseball clothing with like, you know, and like just the it's not even like, how do I put it? It's not even like their caricatures of things. They're just like, it's almost anime level of taking a small thing and like exploding that, or like a kid's cartoon level of taking that small characteristic and making it their entire life in a hyper hyper fixated, hilarious kind of way. I know what you're saying there, and that was more just for anyone that isn't aware, you know, what kind of game the Warriors might be, or if they went back to it, what kind of space they could play in using that like IP. You know, it would basically be back to form for older Rockstar, where the fun was the craziness of the world as a whole, and not just their attempt at tightly crafted narratives, which are well done, just they kind of have a serious tone to them, as opposed to, you know, dealing with a gang that all comes out in baseball gear, or a gang that all comes out in cowboy gear, just or whatever, right?
Yeah, they've definitely undergone a tonal shift since back then. I remember in GTA 3 on PS2, you'd be walking out and just the randomly thrown out voice lines. There would be there's one guy, it's always stuck with me because he would just yell out, "My mother is my sister," and I was always like, "What?"
Yeah, so when you're going through like the mountain area of like San Andreas, I think it's where that is, like the hillbilly area, right? I think.
It's one of those. I can't remember.
But no, I do remember that line. Yes. Yeah. The absurdity of it. Cause that's like, that was what they did. Now the other thing I'll throw out to you, cause you know, again, this is related to you as a brand manager. And you would have seen a lot of these, I'm sure. Your favorite trend over the last few years. Now I already know, and obviously you have 3D Realms. So like, I'm sure that's going to probably skew in the direction of the old boom shoots. However, what has been your favorite trend over the last few years?
Yeah, this will not skew in the direction of the boomer shooters, because I'm going to be honest with you, there's a couple too many for me at the moment. Most of them are really, really good, but it's just I've played so many at this point. My favorite trend is the Souls-like. I'm going to be completely honest. The only thing I don't like about it is that it has like wholesale replaced character action games, and I don't like that. But I do like the fact that we have like Lies of P, which I know a lot of people say is like Bloodborne. It's actually not like Bloodborne, but it looks like Bloodborne, so I get it. But like the directions I see it going, like Lords of the Fallen, which is almost like a return to the old Dark Souls formula. Like I really like seeing the popularity of that kind of game. That said, most of them, not the greatest, but they're trying, so I'll give them credit for that.
You know, I understand what you're saying, and it's weirdly, you know, it's been like 10 years or so at this point. So it's hard to say this in a way that like completely not disingenuous or what have you, but like it's kind of in its infancy, and like that genre, and like, you know, it's hard because most of those games are going to be bigger, or 3D, and they're trying to do their own things. So like, yes, it's been around for a while, but like when I say it's in its infancy, it's also, it's not like it's a 2D game where, oh, even then, like that's hard to say. And either way, because it's a 3D game, bigger world, bigger, what have you, it's not as quick and easy to iterate on when you're putting lots of money into it. Whereas let's say some of like the 2D games that are taking from Soulsborne or Metroidvanias and like mixing them, where it's easier to iterate on and figure out what feels good. Whereas with like the 3D ones, you know, you could be deep into the game when you suddenly go, oh no, this mechanic kind of flawed, but it's too late to turn back. Right, like contracts are signed, or just like, you know, you've already got some early access or whatever. So like it'll be interesting to see how that genre evolves as it kind of gets out of, you know, its growing pains or what have you. I hope that makes sense, just because I know if anyone that it can sound negative when I compare it to like a 2D game with iteration and all that, but for those that know, they probably have a very good idea of what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, I got you. Like Hollow Knight is probably the best example of that. They were pretty open about like being influenced by Dark Souls and like, you know, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. And then one of the best games ever made, especially in like the Metroidvania genre, but it will be very interesting to see where that gets taken for sure.
But yeah, Vince, as I said before, just threw those two out for you real quick, and like I said, I do want to let you get on with your day. I don't want to take up too much more of your evening. So yeah, if there wasn't anything else, I will let you go.
All right, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You know, Vince, thank you. Yes, I thank you very much for making the time. Before we got started, we spoke about how the getting the timing right for this, and for anyone that's for listening and, you know, curious about how that might work. Originally, Vince and I reached, you know, we're in discussion about trying to set something up. Back when you guys were still planning the three, like when you were planning out Realms Deep, how, like, you know, all the events or whatever. So, like, it was obviously a busy time for you. And then, like, you know, PAX came, you know, so my availability dipped, you know, you had some other obligations. And then when that cleared, then it was actually Realms Deep time, and you were dealing with the immediate run-up and then fallout of all of Realms Deep. So, like, you know, I'm happy that you hung around this long so that we could actually work something out. I appreciate getting to speak with you, and it was fun getting to hear your takes on things, as well as more information about a brand manager, that weirdly vague but shouldn't be in some ways job title that you have, and how you got into that job title. So yeah, thank you very much for sticking with me as we worked all that out. And, you know, I'm happy that we finally got to talk. It's been a blast. And I would be upset if it fell off if it had ended up just falling off and we never did get to speak after working towards it for so long, you know?
Oh yeah, same. And it was, again, great to be on here.
You know, Vince, thank you for the kind words on that. And yes, it was absolutely my pleasure. So all thanks right, again. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're all good. I'm not really well versed in podcasts myself, so I don't really know how these things work. Appreciate you having me on. You have a good one.
So thanks again to Vince Steele for making time to have this conversation with me, and thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast. And a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for the use of the music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Vince Steele at 3D Realms and the podcast. And while you're doing that, share, like, follow, and whatever else makes you think the Allegrothem work. Thanks, until next time.